Davis van Optorp here with Matt Ford and Felix Tomzut here to brighten your international break with a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about. We're going to do our two spotlights on Fortuna Düsseldorf and Nuremberg. We're also going to get to some of your questions, but first, there's no other place to start than with the German national team. So Germany played two games over the international break in the Nations League, and they lost both of them. They played Netherlands in Amsterdam and lost 3-0, two of the goals scored in the last 10 minutes or so. And they played France, where they actually held a lead for the first time in perhaps a long time and still relinquished it to the World Cup champions. So, guys, this is really a strange position for Löw to be in because a lot of people have called for his retirement, even after the World Cup. And yet he still is not really getting the results. But it's also the Nations League, which is a new competition that's really supposed to be replacements for friendlies. So, Matt, how are we supposed to treat these performances under Löw now?
I don't think it's a particularly weird position for Löw to be in. I think, especially given the two defeats to Holland and France, his position is now it's pretty much untenable as far as I'm concerned. And not just from a sporting point of view. Obviously, purely looking at the sporting aspect of it, Germany's survival in that League of Nations group. I'm not even going to try and remember what the actual name of the group is or what league it is.
It's Group 1. Group one, League A.
That's quite easy, actually, isn't it? Right. Yeah. Group 1, League A. Survival there is now out of their hands, I believe. They have to beat Holland in Munich and also hope that France beat Holland as well in order to stay up. Sporting wise, that's out the window. I'm not sure particularly how seriously they were taking that, but it's definitely a better measuring stick to measure them by than friendlies. So many of the issues in the Netherlands game in Amsterdam were absolutely the same issues that we saw during the World Cup, particularly at the back, where I thought Hummels and Boateng were completely off the pace. Thomas Müller, I don't want to pick him out and be overly harsh, but he was just one example of another of Löw's old favourites who missed a couple of good chances, albeit the first one was actually quite a good save from the goalkeeper. But so many of those old issues recurring, and once again the refusal of Löw to bring in this transition that he's been talking about, and this what was promised to German fans after the World Cup, that there will be a transition. That hasn't happened.
Granted, though, he did play almost a completely new attack against France.
Against France, yeah. I'm going to come on to that. And I think, yeah, that's fine. And the five players that came in, I thought they were logical choices to bring in, especially Zula with his pace at the back. I thought, given the pace in that French attack, that was a very logical choice.
That was more of a necessary change because Boateng was out.
Yeah, also true. But then again, the switch to the three at the back was also a slight change from Löw. So I thought that, yeah, great transition, something new faces. I thought Sané was promising, although he needs to work on his finishing. Could have arguably wrapped that game up
Could have scored an equaliser in the Netherlands game,
that
too.
As well. Yes, he needs to work on that, certainly. I thought Kehrer and Schultz and Nico Schultz on each side, almost as wing-backs, were good. Germany got the ball out wide to them. Great, all new things, the transition that we want to see from Germany, but for Löw, it's too little too late, and it ultimately didn't come off either. It was just simply too little too late for me.
Felix, should Löw lose his job if Germany get relegated to the second league of the Nations League?
Well, the Nations League in and of itself is hardly the way we should measure Löw. But if you take...
That's kind of what the point I'm trying to get at, too.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not just that. We all know it's not just that. I mean, if you just see how Germany has performed in the last couple of months, just before the World Cup, at the World Cup, and afterwards, there's a pattern. Granted, that pattern was sort of broken against France. The football was different. Instead of possession football, Löw tried to play faster football, less possession-based, more based on speed, based on counter-attack at times, especially against France, when that's the sort of football you need to play against a team that has so much talent. But I tend to agree with what Matt said. It seems like it's too little too late. I have to say, I do ask myself that even if relegations in the Nations League would lead to Yogi Löw's sacking, I can't think of a single name that's prominent enough to replace him.
That's something that Reinhard Grindel said after the France game. It was over the weekend. He said that basically, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he essentially said, I mean, we're keeping Löw because he honestly doesn't see another viable option. Do you think that's a reason to keep Löw around, though?
No, I don't. And I think the reason that Reinhard Grindel can't see another viable option is because Reinhard Grindel is a politician at the head of a football organisation, which for too long has completely neglected the fact that it is supposed to be an association which plays football and should represent football in Germany. So I'm not at all surprised that Reinhard Grindel sees things like that. What the potential names could be, Stefan Kuntz is the one that springs up at you straight
away. The U21 coach, yeah.
Yeah, the U21s beat Ireland, I think, over this international break. Yeah, 2-0 was it?
Yeah.
I think. Progress has been made there. And if we're looking for Germany to bring through this talent, which is undoubtedly there, because they took a youth team / B team / under 21 team to the Confederations Cup and won it. It is there.
And won the U21.
And the U21 Euros as well. Yeah. And that's been the most disappointing thing about this, that Löw has already proven back in 2017 that he can give these players a chance, this new generation a chance, and there is talent there. But he's completely reneged on that. That's what's so disappointing. So maybe bringing in someone like Kuntz would be an option, given that he has also had a lot has worked well with the likes of Brandt, of Sané, etc. So yeah, that'd be the one name that would spring to mind for me. Otherwise, it goes back to the DFB, and no wonder they can't see any other options, because they've taken their eye off the ball for so long. I seriously doubt that there's anybody within that organisation at the moment, from Reinhard Grindel down, who's even capable of identifying a successor capable of restructuring the DFB and bringing them into a new era.
So we got a question on Twitter from @DanaMiner1. How does Löw still have a job, Felix? Does that basically what Matt said? Does that sum it up?
I think it's a collection of a couple of circumstances for the most part. Yes, the results weren't there. The results are not there. The ability up until the France game was not there. And even then, you can't say that during the whole game, Germany has played the football that you'd expect a team in such stature to play. But I think it's a combination of all things. If I need to pick one reason or one aspect of it that's the biggest, I think it's a matter of the DFB being its old conservative self, basically. And that's disappointing, because the DFB became famous for its groundbreaking ideas that led to 2006 and later to 2014, to the World Cup, to winning it. And it looks like things are returning to how it used to be, which basically you could basically say that the dominant sense is conservatism. And Reinhard Grindel epitomizes that. I don't think there's any question about that. Another question I'd like to ask is whether, given Reinhard Grindel's actions in the last couple of months, given how he ran the Özil affair, given how he ran Germany's operation during the World Cup, given the whole package that is Reinhard Grindel in the last couple of months, and of course, the most important thing is, as far as we're concerned, the way the DFB has treated active football fans in Germany, whether it's too little too late for him. Granted, he's not going to lose his job, if only because of the successful Euro 2024 campaign. I don't think that's realistically going to happen. But questions need to be asked about him as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's also fair. I mean, as we said over the summer, questions needs to be asked from pretty much everybody, top to bottom, and in that.
Yeah, but the people who are going to ask those questions need to be commissioned by the people who they're then going to be asking questions about. So you find yourself in a vicious circle whereby any report or committee or whatever the body is that's going to carry out this scrutiny of the German Football Association has to be commissioned by the German Football Association in the first place. And there seems to be a complete unwillingness, first of all, to recognise that it even is an issue. And if they do recognise it, they're certainly not acting on it. And Felix is absolutely right to point out that it's not just Joachim Löw's position that we should be questioning from a footballing point of view, but also Reinhard Grindel's position from a sporting slash political point of view. He has had his head taken off the block somewhat by Germany's by the awarding of Euro 2024 to Germany. I think that'll only be a slight respite for him, and it won't be long before the pressure starts to mount again on him from various angles.
Well, so let's get back to Löw's position first, because I think that we need to wrap up this section by just talking about what really is coming next for Germany, which is they obviously have that end game that you said, Matt, but after that they have Euro qualifying, and then they have the European Championship. Do we still expect Löw to be the coach for the 2020 European Championship?
Yes, I do lean towards expecting him to be there, although I don't think he should be, but I expect that he probably will be, especially given that he's only signed a new contract until 2022, am I correct?
Yeah, to the next World Cup, I believe.
Yeah, and he signed that in the weeks before the World Cup, which was another odd decision, the bizarreness of which we probably can't go into now. But so that's probably been sorted. That contract is there as well. Yeah, I expect he will be there, bar a collapse, which is even bigger than Nations League relegation, and which would obviously be a failure to qualify.
Felix, do you agree?
I do agree. I think Joachim Löw will most likely be Germany's coach for the Euros. I think Germany will eventually qualify to Euros. I don't think that's in question here, but I do think...
Well, is it?
Almost
everybody except for the Netherlands qualified for the last Euros.
Yeah,
so.
And
half the confederation qualifies Euros, for the Euros.
And Joachim Löw, it must be said, didn't look good in the press conference before the Holland game, when he even had I know it was only tongue-in-cheek, but should he really be coming out with jokes in the... no, I don't think we're in a... He said we're not in a similar crisis to the Netherlands, because after all, we've qualified for the past two tournaments. I think given the sort of position he was in personally and the position the team was in, I don't think that joke was particularly suitable.
No, but that just goes to show exactly the confidence that Löw has in his job. And that sort of confidence is something that's very rare in football nowadays, and it's very rare for a reason. When you're a coach in the top levels, there needs to be a certain amount of tension, a certain amount of stress on a constant basis for you to keep on performing. And that doesn't seem to happen neither from the DFB nor from Löw himself. But I do expect him to be the coach for the next Euros.
All right, so let's get on to our spotlight sections. We're doing two this time. We got a decent amount of feedback from the last one, and it seems like that it was popular enough for us to do it again. And this time we want to highlight both of the teams that got promoted to the Bundesliga last season. That's Fortuna Düsseldorf and Erste FC Nürnberg. We're going to start with Fortuna Düsseldorf first, because we do have some exclusive content from Matt Ford coming up. But before we get to that, I want to do my quick crash course for all of you guys that want to know a little bit more about Fortuna Düsseldorf. They were founded in 1895. They actually founded as the Turnverein Flingern. Flingern is a working class area in Düsseldorf. And they're one of the many clubs in Germany, which is, I love these kinds of clubs, that is basically the amalgamation of many different clubs that come together. They merged in 1919 with the Fußball Club Fortuna, which merged with the Fußball Club Alemannia in Düsseldorf a few years before that. And they became the Düsseldorfer Turn- and Sportverein Fortuna 1895 in 1919, after they merged the two clubs together. Fortuna actually is named, it was the name of the Roman goddess of fortune. I'm not sure what the Greek name of the goddess is.
Latin, I think, right?
Yeah. Latin or Greek. I think we're exposing our lack of classical knowledge. Yeah, yeah.
So, but that's where Fortuna comes from. They've mostly played in the Oberliga West before they joined the Bundesliga, or before the Bundesliga was founded, actually. And they were earned promotion in 1966 to the Bundesliga, but were relegated the very next season. They only spent one season. And then in the 70s, they were promoted again. And they even made it, and even though they have not won a Bundesliga title, they have actually gone to the final of the Cup Winners' Cup before losing to Barcelona And that was because they won the German Cup in 1979, and they also won the German Cup in 1980. They are the basically the definition of what Germans call a Fahrstuhlverein, which is basically a club that goes up and down the levels of German football.
An elevator club.
Yeah, an elevator club. They dropped to the fourth tier, in fact, in 2002 to 2004, before eventually making their way back up to the Bundesliga. Their previous season in the Bundesliga before this season was in 2012-13, and they got relegated that same season. So they're in their sixth promotion to the Bundesliga last season under Friedhelm Funkel. So before we break all of that down, we have to get to Matt's conversation with some Fortuna Düsseldorf fans, which he did last match day before the and after the Schalke game.
Still here with the Düsseldorf fans in the pub before kickoff. Some more interesting accents going around. Still not German. What's your name, mate, and where are you from?
Paul, originally from Glasgow.
And am I right in saying that you're a Düsseldorf season ticket holder?
Yeah, there's a few of us, but I...
Okay, so can you explain the story behind that?
It's a long story, so you want to hear all the detail?
Go on, we've got time.
Okay, so my wife and I...
just got a slight break here while the Altbier is filled up. I just described the scene. We've got a little keg of beer on the table here. And, the Düsseldorf fans seem to be going through it quite well. Altbier being a local drink in Düsseldorf.
So my wife and I made a city break in 2002. Just right. July, there was no football on, really good time, fantastic weather. Go to the airport to get the flight home. There's a sports shop. You need to bear in mind, I was 26 at the time, so right. Wearing a football shirt was an acceptable fashion choice. Yeah. 42 years old now, no longer. And they have this black shirt with a red star and a white skull and crossbones. And I'm like, wow, that's one of the most amazing football shirts I've ever seen. Okay. And the women in the sports shop are like, no, here's Schalke, here's Borussia Dortmund, here's Bayern München. These are the famous teams of Germany. These are the best souvenirs. So, no, tell me about this shop. She said, well, it's a local amateur team. They're in the fourth league, as was the case at the time, and they're sponsored by a local punk group, the Tottenhoof.
Yeah.
Now, I'm from Clyde Bank near Glasgow, and Clyde Bank were sponsored in the 90s by Wet, Wet, Wet.
Right.
So I've gone, right, this is the German version of Clyde Bank Football Club. I have to buy this shirt. I have to follow them on the internet. So fast forward a couple of years, been keeping an eye out on the results for a couple of years. We carry on making... Early 2000s, the budget airlines, you could go anywhere you wanted for a couple of quid. And I said, let's go back to Germany. I said, well, tell you what, let's go to Düsseldorf, take in a game. We came, we saw a game, we loved it. We told our mates about it. They said, that sounds great. Let's come as well. And fast forward 220 or so games later, and we're still here. And
do you fly over extra for every game? Have you moved over it?
No, we don't so much fly. We live in Ashford in Kent.
Right.
So we drive most of the time. So this time we drove.
Okay.
So we left our house Friday morning. We were here Friday afternoon. We've got a regular hotel.
And you do that for every Düsseldorf home game?
At 17 league games at home a season, and I'd say on average we do 15, maybe. Some midweek games can be difficult. Monday night games, when we get them, they're a nuisance because it's 2 days off work. But then we make up for it by going to maybe 6-7 away games a season. So we kind of average about 22 games a season, mostly at home, some away.
That's ridiculous commitment. What do your friends back in the UK say when you're driving off to Germany every second week?
Well, to be fair, some of them are here today.
So you just started bringing them with you.
Yeah. But also, it's like, well, we don't have kids. We don't have a need to go and spend 2 weeks on a beach in the summer. We're quite happy to... So, in Germany, they have what's called an English of offer, an English week.
English week.
Yeah, so in the midweek game. So we go, right, okay, let's take a week's holiday. So we were in Stuttgart, then home against Leverkusen, then away in Nuremberg. We make a week's holiday out of that.
Yeah.
So we go and see different places in Germany.
Hi, mate.
And
no surprise that he knows you lot, right? Yeah, that's it.
But yeah, so we're quite happy to spend our time in Germany on holiday.
Yeah. That's fascinating. And what sort of response do you get from the local Düsseldorf fans over the game?
Mostly positive. I'd say 99%.
Do they not think you're a bit off your head?
Yeah, one or two. Yeah. And even in this pub, one or two are like, really? You come all this way?
Is this the regular haunt where you come?
We have a reserve table here. The reason we've got a barrel on our table is because they know us and they trust us. Yeah.
So we've got a Scot who lives in Kent, but has a local pub
In Dusseldorf.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of my local pubs in Dusseldorf. There are others.
Let's talk about Dusseldorf on the pitch. First time back in the Bundesliga since
2012.
Yeah. So it's been quite a long time coming.
It has, and we did think we were better prepared this season. We've started this season worse than we started our last Bundesliga one season, and we got relegated that time. It's going to be hard. We were overwhelming favourites for relegation. Beat Hoffenheim, who are Champions League. Got hammered last week in Nuremberg against the team who finished behind us in the league last season in second league. So yeah, it's tricky. It's going to be a hard game today. Our manager has managed teams against Schalke 19 times, never won.
The manager being Friedhelm Funkel. I believe he's the oldest coach in the Bundesliga. I think I'm right in saying.
I'll have to take your word for that, but he's definitely the right man for the job.
Is he popular among Dusseldorf fans?
Yeah. So he's pretty local. He comes from a city called Neuss, which is just over the Rhine from here. The mistake we made last time was we sacked the coach that took us up to Bundesliga 1 after we got relegated, and we all said that's really unfair. We got promoted too quickly, so he should not be punished for that. With Funkel, it's not always the best football, but you step back, you look at the big picture, he's the right man for the job.
And do you think ultimately come the end of the season Dusseldorf have got enough to stay in the Bundesliga? Because there are a few teams down there that could be relegation contenders, and Jorgenberg are probably one. Hanover have had a terrible start.
It's going to be difficult. Traditionally, although we're a big club from a big city, historically we've not necessarily been the best run financially. So our managing director, Dr. Robert Schaefer, is doing he's not universally popular, he's a very good businessman. But whether he's done enough to give us the financial backing we need right now to stay up, I'm not sure. My own gut feelers will probably go down, but I also think that that's not necessarily the end of the story. I think we'll be in a very strong position to challenge again next year, the year after. I think we're on the trajectory, even if we have to take two steps forward, one step back.
You know? I think that's a sensible way of looking at it. What's the fan culture like here in Dusseldorf?
The guys who go to games, fantastic. Our ultras, our support, superb. The bigger picture, sometimes I think the city doesn't appreciate the club as much as it should. This is the first sellout this season.
I was going to say, because it's the first time back in the Bundesliga since 2012, and yet in the first home game against Augsburg, was there about 10 or 15,000 empty seats?
Well, it's been that way for the first three home games. And, you know, we're match-going fans. It's like, we're doing what we can do, but what's the rest of the city doing to get behind the club?
I think you're doing more than enough with the journeys you're going on. Yeah, I was there against Leverkusen last week, which is actually a really, really good performance from Dusseldorf, I thought. It could have been 2 or 3 goals at my half-time. Well, I think, Leverkusen definitely had that little bit of quality that showed through in the second half. Today's the first sellout, and you were saying that maybe the city doesn't get behind them enough. That's strange, isn't it? I mean, Dusseldorf is the capital of the state of Nordrhein-Westphalia, but it doesn't seem to have the same euphoria around it that perhaps Cologne has or Mönchengladbach.
Yeah. So Cologne's maybe three times the size of Dusseldorf population-wise. You've also got historic factors. So the 1970s, Borussia Mönchengladbach were the best team in Germany. Have you seen them in Bayern?
Of course, later on they're playing Bayern Munich, and that is technically, from a historical point of view, that's the classica in German football.
Absolutely. And so a lot of Dusseldorfers grew up supporting Gladbach because they were the big team in the region.
And it's so close.
Yeah. So we kind of have, there's a cultural issue there. Dusseldorf itself, the city has a reputation as the German word is shikimiki,
so it's quite posh.
Yuppie-ish, so people don't necessarily want to associate with a low culture sport or activity like football. But yeah, I struggle to comprehend why the city isn't more behind the club.
No, it is interesting, like I said, the contrast is to other local clubs in the region, of which there are loads. It's quite astounding. Do you think that trend will change? Does Dusseldorf stay in the league a bit longer?
I don't think it can get any worse. I think if we stay up, then it will get much better. But it is one of those things. We need to stay up. So the team needs to play its part as well.
Who are the main rivals for Dusseldorf, from your point of view?
Well, there's only one real rival, and that's FC Köln, Cologne. Gladbach. I mean, I remember the days our rivals were Wuppertal and Rot-Weiss Essen. I don't bet anyone any malice. I've been to a Köln-Düsseldorf away game. that was an experience. But, you know, I've also been to Kona as a tourist, and Kona's, they're good guys. They love their club. But, yeah, Kona's our rival, no doubt about it.
You just poured yourself another Alt beer. I've got a colleague of mine who believes that if you were blindfolded, you couldn't tell the difference between Alt beer and Kölsch.
No, I disagree with that. Alt beer's a lot maltier.
Yeah.
I have read... I speak enough German to be able to read German magazines, and I know there was a blind taste test in one of the craft beer magazines, or this Oriental. No, I could tell the difference. There is a dry back taste to Kölsch, and there's a malty taste to Alt beer. So yeah, I'm confident I could tell the difference.
Brilliant, thank you for your time, mate.
Yeah, no worries.
That was Matt Ford in Düsseldorf. So let's get on to Friedhelm Funkel, because he is an interesting character in the fact that nobody has been in German football longer than he has at this moment in time. And he has taken many clubs, I believe five clubs, up from the second division to the top division. But his Bundesliga record is not really that great. So, Matt, what have you seen from Friedhelm Funkel this season that would make you believe that they would go up or stay in the division or go down?
Like you said, he's the oldest coach in the Bundesliga this season, I think I'm right in saying. Vastly experienced, but whether that has always been positive experience, I think, is quite debatable. You'd have to ask Fortuna Düsseldorf fans a bit more about that. As Paul, who I spoke to on that live section, pointed out, I think he, in 19 or 20 fixtures against Schalke with various teams, not just Düsseldorf, he's never won, so that's a particularly bad example. He's coming up against another old club of his this weekend. They play Frankfurt away. So that should be an interesting evening for him. But by all accounts, he seems popular. He seems popular with his players. He seems popular with the supporters. He definitely is a coach who belongs to that older school. By all accounts, good friends with Jupp Heynckes. Peter Hermann was Jupp Heynckes'
number two,
number two, who was at Düsseldorf.
Yes, he was.
Before that. Lots of connections there. So obviously a hugely respected coach. Like I said, it's his record, which is a slight issue, and especially because Düsseldorf find themselves already, we've only had seven match days so far, but already second from bottom, and that only because, the likes of Schalke have had a shocking start, and Hanover as well.
The only team that's below them right now is Stuttgart. But Felix, they've actually been in some of these games. I mean, against Hoffenheim and Leverkusen and Schalke, teams that are playing in Europe right now, and also are expected to beat them. They've held them scoreless for about a half, but then in the second half they kind of fall apart a little bit. What have you seen from Düsseldorf so far this season?
Yeah, I think Fortuna Düsseldorf made some very positive signings in the summer, and their squad building has been generally good. Many people were hoping they're gonna do well this season, and I don't think we can entirely rule it out at the moment, because, as you said, they showed some promising signs against some of the best teams in the league, teams that play European football, teams like Hoffenheim that were almost equal rivals to teams like Manchester City in the Champions League. So I don't think we can rule it out entirely, but at the moment they're second to last. It doesn't look very good numbers-wise. They need to be a bit more efficient. Once that comes, they might get better and go up in the table. They're personally one of my two clubs to get relegated directly this season. For Friedhelm Funkel, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. So, the other thing interesting about Düsseldorf this season, Matt, is last year a lot of the teams that got promoted or gotten position to be promoted scored a lot of goals in the second division last season, but Düsseldorf in their last four games have only scored once, and they've only scored multiple goals in one game, which was their win against Hoffenheim.
Yeah, and those goals came extremely late, so it was a last minute winner against Hoffenheim, and it was a yeah it was yeah there was the the game against Leverkusen as well was a penalty late on as well. So late, in fact, that I think I said on the live section then that the game finished 2-0 because the goal was that late that I completely forgot it had even happened. That's an issue. So effectively, you can even say that the four games without a goal from open play. Various reasons for that. They are missing huge chances. The game against Leverkusen that I was at, they honestly could have been 2 or 3 goals up by half time. I think we discussed that a couple of weeks ago. A couple of good saves, admittedly, from the Leverkusen goalkeeper, but the chances were there. I think it was just 8 or 9 minutes into the game against Schalke. It was Raman who went through 1-on-1. I mean, you absolutely have to be putting chances away when you're 1-on-1 against a team like Schalke. And that ended up going wide.
I just want to jump on that. Luda Bacchio also had a terrific chance against Nuremberg, I think, the week before, and blew it, even though he was 1-on-1 with the goalkeeper.
Marvin Ducksch doesn't seem to have fired yet. Obviously,
he hasn't scored a goal.
But impressive for Kiel last season. And the question has to be, you know, is he gonna come in and find his feet, or is he gonna turn into a sort of Simon Terodde sort of player who has more than proved his worth in the second division, but perhaps the Bundesliga is a slight step up. That certainly is sorting out. Yeah, I also wonder if the experience, the professionalism, the qualities there in midfield for Dusseldorf have really put their foot on the ball and start providing the forwards with the sort of passes that they need.
That's the biggest problem I see, actually, because you see a lot of the players that are playing in midfield are guys that can win the ball really well. So it's clearly a practice. I mean, and Dusseldorf many times this season has played with a back five. So they have Gieselman on the left, and they have John Zimmer on the right. They're really the ones that are almost the most creative players in the team, because they have that midfield of Zimmermann and Sobotka and Alfredo Morales.
But have they got enough going forward?
Exactly.
To provide that connection.
Exactly.
I mean, I know it's going back a couple of years. I'm not saying this would be the be-all and end-all or the ultimate solution for Dusseldorf, but one player who stood out when I saw them play a couple of years ago was Elas Bebu, who's now at... Is he still at Hannover?
He's at Hannover,
still at Hannover,
yeah.
Now, isn't he? And that, to me, was the perfect player who was providing that link between midfield and attack and really getting Dusseldorf into dangerous situations. And, yeah, they're definitely lacking that at the moment.
So... We also have to talk a little bit about the defense, because they do have Kahn Ayhan, who is a Schalke Academy product, has been at Dusseldorf, I believe, for 4 years, and they just recruited Marcin Kaminski from Stuttgart. On paper, that seems like a decent central defense pairing, but it hasn't really clicked so far.
The Kaminski signing definitely came out of the blue towards the end of the transfer period. I'm surprised that Stuttgart let him go. I wonder if it's just taking a little bit of time for that to gel, because one thing that stood out for Dusseldorf is the amount of goals that they're conceding in quick succession. It was 2 goals in 7 minutes or something for Leverkusen just after half time. Schalke did a similar thing away at Dusseldorf, scored 2 goals in quick succession just after half time. I think they've conceded 10 goals in the second half. I wonder if there's a little bit more gelling which needs to be done to prevent these lapses of concentration.
And whether it'll be done in time for them to start grabbing the points they need.
Because Felix, like you said, I mean, eventually they're going to run out of time if they don't click in time. And what I read recently is that they don't really have, they also don't have the resources to necessarily get reinforcements in January. I mean, they only had about 30 million euros going into this season to recruit players. And the player, like you said, the player recruitment has been good. But at the same time, I mean, do they have enough Bundesliga quality players in their team to get the job done? I mean, Marvin Ducksch, as you mentioned, Matt, was a decent signing for them, 2 million euros from Holstein Kiel. Scored 18 goals in the second Bundesliga last year, but he hasn't gotten on the score sheet. And Ruben Henning is the one that starts consistently, not Marvin Ducksch. So, I mean, are these signings going to make an impact in time before it's too late?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Ducksch, I think his qualities, we could see it last season. He's a quality attacker on his day. But the thing is, as Matt mentioned, you do get the sense that he could turn out to be this brilliant at the Zweite Bundesliga, yet cannot really adapt to the level of the First Bundesliga. You can see that he's struggling at the moment. But I do think it's a matter of gelling and it's a matter of getting used to the level that you're playing in. And in a way, also for a player like Dukes, once it'll click, he'll start scoring them, and Düsseldorf certainly need it. Generally speaking, yes, the recruitment has been good given the circumstances. The only question is whether this is enough. I personally don't think so. Another reason for that is that last season when they played Zweite Bundesliga, they weren't the top scorer, they weren't the best defense, they were just very effective. They knew how to win games. That's why I accidentally mentioned the Dresden game earlier, because that game in which they sealed their promotion, that game stood out. They knew how to get the job done. And at the moment, that doesn't seem to be happening. Like, it's the other way around. They play good games against some tough opposition, yet they fail to grab the points. Whether that clinical aspect of their game is going to return remains to be seen. But that's going to determine their fate, basically, this season.
So, Matt, you talked about in the live section based with some of the Düsseldorf fans, and what you said earlier in the season that it was one of the places that you wanted to go to try to get a taste of the fan culture. I don't know if you said that on the podcast, but you definitely have said that off air. What has it been like to go to Düsseldorf games this season?
Yeah, like I said, I've been to a couple, spoken to quite a few fans of various sorts, various various descriptions, different elements of the fan scene there. It's an interesting place. We'd mentioned it on the live section that they have something of a supporter issue, a fan problem in Düsseldorf, not in terms of violence or bad behaviour or anything like that, but more in that they're surrounded by so many big clubs that they often struggle to get the ground filled. I mean, that Augsburg game that we mentioned, the first home game this season, was their first Bundesliga home game in 5 or 6 years, and there were over like 13,000 empty seats. And the reasons for that, well, there's many reasons. There's a whole generation of Düsseldorf fans who, when Fortuna were playing, or just Düsseldorfers, people from the city, when Fortuna were playing in the Regionalliga or the Oberliga, the biggest team was nearby Mönchengladbach, who were at the time European greats back in the 70s and 80s. So a whole generation of Düsseldorf had ended up being Borussia Mönchengladbach fans. Similar can be said to a slightly lesser extent about Schalke, and even lesser extent about Cologne, Leverkusen as well. But these are all huge clubs which are nearby, and have over the years almost taken support away from Fortuna Düsseldorf. Also doesn't necessarily help, and I think Paul admitted it there on the podcast, and others did too who I spoke to. They don't really consider their own city, Düsseldorf, as a particularly enthusiastic football city. Düsseldorf is a great city. It's a beautiful city. There's a lot to do. There's a great amount of culture there. Lots of good bars as well and good beer, but it's also, it does have this reputation as a slightly more well-off, slightly hipper city, a much more professional city, and whether that always necessarily goes hand in hand with hardcore football support, I'm not sure if it always does. So certainly an interesting situation, because if you look at the comparison down the river in Cologne, that's a city which, albeit being bigger, is almost selling out a 50,000-seat stadium in Division 2, where there's a complete ecstasy surrounding football in the city.
Granted, I mean, you could just look at the member numbers of both of those clubs. I mean, Cologne has over 100,000 members, and Düsseldorf, I think, has only got somewhere in the 10,000 or so at some members of their club. Felix, you said you went to a game a few years ago when they were still in the second division. Do you feel... Does what Matt just said, does that ring true to you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very diverse, they have a very diverse support. And you can feel it from basically from the outset, from the moment you were there. I think Düsseldorf as a city, whenever you're there, you don't get the feeling that the city really... Yeah, of course, you see Fortuna Düsseldorf stickers everywhere. You see even commercials of the actual club on the Straßenbahn, on the local trams. But you get the feeling that they need these promotions in order to bring new supporters. And I'm personally not very convinced it has a lot to do with the fact that there are lots of clubs around there. I think in this region in Germany, many people are very attached to their locality, very attached to their city. Yet in Düsseldorf, for some reason, it hasn't been clicking so far. I'm wondering why. I can't say I have the answers, but it hasn't been clicking like it has in Cologne, for instance, or in a place like Gelsenkirchen.
Well, yeah, they are. It shouldn't be taken away. They are a club with an identity. They do identify as a carnival club, similar to the way Cologne do, and other sort of carnival cities in the region like Mainz as well. That came across in that massive choreography that they did ahead of the Schalke game, which was the biggest they'd ever done, cost them over €17,000, and that depicted the whole end of one stadium as a circus stage. Yeah, absolutely. And I asked one of the ultras there, say, what's it all about? Why have you chosen a big circus theme? And he said, well, because we're a circus club. You know, it's constant drama here. We're up and down financial mismanagement, relegations, promotions. He said, you know, and obviously they celebrate carnival as well. So yes, yeah, we're a circus club. So we're proud of that. So there is an identity there. It's not to say that Fortuna Düsseldorf have no identity as a football club. They do. One fan that I was talking to, he admitted, yeah, we have a regular hardcore support of about 20,000, but it's not. Yeah, it's simply not on the same level in terms of numbers as surrounding clubs.
All right, let's get to this question sent in from Twitter by TheBeats14. It reads, why do people moan so much about RB when Fortuna have a massive advantage due to the fact that they don't own their stadium? Matt, you were pretty fired up about this question. Do you want to give your answer first?
I've been fired up. I didn't really understand it. Fortuna don't own their stadium. I don't really see the connection because a lot of Bundesliga clubs don't, and second division clubs don't own their stadium.
I don't know. Like I said off air, I can't really name that many teams that own their stadium.
Bayern Munich
is really the only one that I can name off the top
also
of my
from
head.
Recently, relatively.
And just against top of my head, Hertha Berlin obviously don't. That's also owned by the city. Cologne's is owned by the city.
And speaking of Bayern Munich, they played for years in the Olympiastadion, which belonged to the city. And before that, they played on the Grünwalder Straße Stadion, which also still belongs to the city.
Yes, I'm not sure if that's it's an advantage, especially given the fate of some of those teams who don't own their own stadium either. Also, when you don't own your own stadium, the simple issue of rent, that takes a lot of money out in terms of renting it, whether that's from a private owner or from the city council. So yeah, I don't think that's an advantage for Fortuna Düsseldorf.
In relation to RB, I mean, the biggest difference that a lot of people can point out is the fact that it's, I mean, even though Fortuna Düsseldorf may not have enough time in the Bundesliga to be the traditional Verein, but they're still owned completely by the club. They haven't outsourced their football department. One of the only a few teams still in the top tiers of German football that have done that. And they've also spent 24 seasons in the Bundesliga, so it's still a club that does have some Bundesliga history. So I think the biggest problem, like you've said many times, Matt, is that a lot of the reason why RB Leipzig exists is to promote a soda. So I think those are two completely different arguments. So
I would agree with that.
Absolutely. I think for the most part, when you talk about a club like Fortuna Düsseldorf, it's important to mention that in many cases, as I mentioned earlier, many people here care a lot about their local identity, and they care a lot because it's their identity. It doesn't belong to anyone else. And that aspect of Red Bull coming and taking over a club basically is the exact opposite of that. And why I think people there wouldn't care to play Dritte Liga or Regionalliga as long as it's their identity and their club.
By the way, Düsseldorf's Twitter account is also well known for refusing to use the RB Leipzig logo on their graphics, and when they played in Leipzig earlier this season, their hashtag for the game was not whatever it was RB L or F95 or something like that. It was F95 in Leipzig because they refused to use the RB branding in on their Twitter account, which is basically underlining the point that we just made and why everybody is, well, not everybody, but why a lot of people are up in arms about RB Leipzig making it to the Bundesliga.
Yeah, didn't necessarily go down well with everyone. I know there are a few consumers over in Leipzig who said, oh, that's really, really petty. Yeah, maybe it is, but I think, yeah, any sort of little reminder that the club they were up against isn't necessarily a club is fine, as long as things don't get violent or abusive or anything like that. Yeah, it must also be said that Fortuna Düsseldorf's own ground has gone through so many sponsorship names down the years. It was the Esprit Arena, now it's the Merkur Spielfeld Arena or something.
Merkur Spiel Arena,
something, yeah. Mad, and it's not a particularly good ground to visit, I must admit. The tram connection out, it's about a 30-minute tram ride out of town. It's a nightmare to get to. The trams are quite small. Getting away from there is quite difficult.
Best of luck in Euro 2024, by the
way. Is it a host stadium? Yeah, I've had to leave games at Dusseldorf 5 minutes early to make sure I get on a tram to get away to get on a train. It looks like a shopping mall from the outside. I'm not a huge fan of the stadium, must admit, but
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, no, not a huge fan, but Dusseldorf as a city, great. As a club, interesting, full of history and a not an entity, but yeah, be difficult for them to stay up this year.
All right, let's move on to the other club that's trying to stay up this year, which is Nuremberg. So let me get to our crash course on Nuremberg. It was founded in May 1900 by 18 gymnasts as a rugby club, and it wasn't until 1901 that they actually decided to play football using the rules of the English game. They are actually one of the most successful clubs in Germany, even though their recent history wouldn't suggest that reputation. And that's because they have won 9 titles, 8 of which occurred before the Bundesliga founded. And in fact, between the 1919-20 season and the 1926-27 season, they won 5 titles in that stretch. And then they also won titles in 1935-36, 1947-48, and 1960-61. So a lot of titles, like I said, preceding the Bundesliga era. They also have spent 33 seasons in the Bundesliga and are one of the founding members and even won the Bundesliga. That was their 9th title, won the Bundesliga in 1968, but were relegated the next season. And that's basically what their biggest reputation is, I would say, is now, which is being the club that has been relegated the most from the Bundesliga. They've been relegated 8.
Also the only champions to be relegated, I think.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I am not sure. I didn't find that out.
1968 won the league, 1969 went down. Yes. I think they are the only Bundesliga champions to have gone down.
So because they've been successful in the past, they have gone on to UEFA competition, and the farthest they've made it in the UEFA competition was they made the semifinals of the Cup Winners' Cup before losing to Atletico Madrid 2-3. They play in the Max Marlach Stadion, which was a player that played from 1945 to 1960. And they are also, like Dusseldorf, they are owned 100% by their fans. And their nickname, because of their success before the Bundesliga, is Der Club. So Fortuna names.
That successful in the 1920s that German football generally considered them to be the club. There was no other club in German football back then, apparently. Schalke might dispute that. They were quite good back in those decades as well. But yeah, Der Club.
It's kind of very a polarizing season for them this year because they have been absolutely shellacked away from home, losing to Leipzig 6-0 and Dortmund 7-0. But at home, they've only conceded 1 goal. So basically, most of their goals, all but one of their goals, have been conceded away from home. Matt, what do you make of that record? Because we've seen grounds like that in the past. For example, Freiburg is a ground that's really tough to go to. I don't know if Nuremberg has had the reputation of a tough ground to go to, but this season that seems to be the case. And then conversely, it seems like they're a completely different side away from home.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be playing a role. That home form is really impressive, particularly the 3-0 win at home to fellow promoted team. Dusseldorf, really, that was really important for them. They're the sort of teams that they have to be getting points against. At the end of the day, if they're going to stay up, they don't need to be getting points against Red Bull Leipzig and Borussia Dortmund. However, I think the pretty much complete lack of Bundesliga experience, whether from the coach, Michael Körner, or within the squad, the complete lack of Bundesliga experience has really, really told in those two heavy defeats on the road. The sporting director, Andreas Bornemann, was saying after the 7-0 was Dortmund, the 6-0 was Red Bull,
right,
wasn't it? After you get mixed up, don't you? After the 6-0, that we expected throughout the season to have a couple of games where we really do get smashed because we're just not at that level. He said it was just unfortunate that they came in such quick succession, and I think that there's a lot to be said for that. They were going to be on the end of some hidings this season, but yeah, coming so close as they did was obviously a blow, and especially to the goalkeeper, is it Florian or Fabian Bredlov?
Fabian Bredlov.
The poor lad almost looked almost in tears at points during that Red Bull game. He was asked afterwards, what's going on, and he said, if we're not going to start talking about my position as a goalkeeper now, then when are we? Kölner's put an arm round him, it seems, and hopefully they would have had a good chat over the international break. And I don't know, maybe when they come back on match day 8, maybe it is a time just to take Bredlow out of the firing line slightly, because it can't be good. Although it's not necessarily his fault that they shipped all those goals.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, because there's, I think, 3 expected changes now to Nuremberg's defense. Christian Mathenia, who came in at the summer.
A bit of experience could do them well,
right? So he's expected to replace Fabian Bredlov at least maybe in the interim. Also Ewerton, who has been injured and who has been a somewhat key defender in recent seasons,
played almost every game in the second division for them last season. And they've definitely missed him at the back.
Yeah. So Lucas Mull, who's a 21-year-old who is not like maybe a Jonathan Tah 21-year-old, but more of a reserve player coming in to just fill a role for Nuremberg, 21-year-old. He's going to go back to the bench once Everton comes back. And with Tim Leibold suspended for the next game, Robert Bauer is supposed to start. And Robert Bauer wasn't, we have to remember about Robert Bauer, it was only a few seasons ago that he was playing in the Olympics. So,
and again, Bundesliga experience is certainly what they need.
Yeah. So do you think, Matt, Felix, do you think that these problems at the back can eventually be fixed? Because they're a decent offensive team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're a team that isn't afraid of going forward, as we've seen at home anyways. I do think that Mathenia could be the key here, because he's a goalkeeper that had this experience with HSV, that incredible, one of many incredible relegation survival battles of HSV, like the season before last. He was their goalkeeper, and I think that experience could be vital to a team like Nuremberg. I also think we can learn a lot of how the club sees these big defeats from how Michael Kölner spoke after that second result against Red Bull, that six nil that Matt mentioned earlier. Kölner said it's a bitter defeat, but at the end of the day, we took it into account, and the most important thing for us is to learn from those things. What I'm going to do as a coach, I'm going to show the players not the score over and over again, but I'm going to show them only their mistakes and how do we take this forward. Because at the end of the day, similarly to Düsseldorf, by the way, they're a club that doesn't have that many resources. They're not rich. They don't have the money for many reinforcements, and they're going to make do with what they have. Michael Kölner himself said that they're basically going to focus on giving young players that Bundesliga experience, hoping that some of them will turn out to be good enough maybe to be sold later, but at the end of the day, that's the focus of the club. Whether that'll be enough, I'm not entirely convinced, but at the moment they're 12th.
They're 12th.
The weird thing is, despite those massive defeats, they have done arguably better, well, not just in terms of league position, better than Dusseldorf. this season. They're also ahead. They're ahead of Hannover and Stuttgart as well, who were the two promoted teams last season. So yeah, it's definitely not all bad. And in fact, I was writing down a list of positives for Nuremberg fans to take away. Yeah, like Felix said, they're 12th. They have 8 points already. That's good.
-9 goal difference.
Yeah,
but
-9, but that can be worked on. A lot of games to go.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Bremen was shipping like 60 goals in a season, and we're still staying in the Bundesliga. So it's definitely possible, even if you could ship so many goals. I mean, Freiburg 2 seasons ago had a -15 goal difference, and we're in 6th place somehow. So, yeah.
So it can be done. As Felix mentioned, they're unbeaten at home. As you also said, yeah, the way Kölner and Bornemann are approaching this crisis is, I think, really, really sensible. No one's getting carried away. You don't get the impression that the press are jumping on the back at all in Nuremberg. So I think that's another positive to take away. I also managed to work out that I think, and I may be wrong, that they are in the top 6 in terms of successful passes. So this is a team who's not scared, despite the situation they're in, still not scared to get the ball on the deck and play the ball around and keep possession with confidence. That's a positive to take away. The big defeats came against Borussia Dortmund and Red Bull. Like I said, they're teams you can lose against. And if you're going to get smashed by anyone, get smashed by teams who are first and second in the league. So that's also fine. It's one of their best positions as a club in going back 6 or 7 years. And finally, I think the fans are taking it really, really well as well. They had a big banner. I think it was against Dusseldorf, which came directly after the defeat in Dortmund, where they greeted the players with a big banner saying, like, don't worry. The definition of progress is getting up more than you fall down. So everyone's behind them in Nuremberg, and I think they all seem to be looking at it quite logically, quite sensibly, even with the idea that if we do go down again this season, the experience will put us in good stead to come back up again at some point.
Yeah, and also we have to say about Michael Kölner that he's a guy that has been in the club since 2016. He was the leader.
Yeah, although
not as
a coach.
No,
but that is an issue.
But he in a way he was, because he was the leader of their youth academy, and he's coached the second team. And you see the players that have come through recently, Kevin Möwald, who they recently sold to Bremen, and Cedric Teuchert also, who was sold to Schalke. And you also have to keep in mind that they still have Edouard Leuven, who is a good player who is best with the ball at his feet, and went from what I saw of the Dusseldorf Nuremberg game, when Leuven was playing higher up the field and they switched to basically a 4-2-3-1 rather than a 4-1-4-1, and they were really making things happen, and you can definitely see that Kölner is a guy who knows his players, and he doesn't always make the right decision. I mean, he kind of put Nuremberg in the shell against Leipzig when they started countering left and right, but he can make those in-game decisions, and also because he has been with the club long enough that he knows the best way to bring them towards success.
I think the issues might be the in-between game decisions, which are more than the in-game decisions. He said after the Dortmund game that it's okay, we've conceded 7 goals, but it's a tough league, a new league, we will learn from this, only for the same thing to happen again against Red Bull. So yeah, I'd expect if that was to happen again, yeah, questions would definitely be asked. But in general, despite the massive thrashings, arguably in a slightly better situation than Dusseldorf.
Before we get to the fan scene, I want to ask one question, since we're doing both of these clubs, Dusseldorf and Nuremberg. I think it's futile to ask who is going to stay up, because there's so many teams that it really depends on. But based on what we've seen through 7 weeks, I mean, it's 20% through the season. Who do you think is more likely to stay up between Nuremberg and Dusseldorf?
I think basically from what we've seen so far, I'd go for Nuremberg purely for the reason that if you want to stay up as a newly promoted team, you need to get points on at home first and foremost. And when you're a club like Nuremberg that has such a great support in the city, arguably the biggest club in Franken, I don't think that's even in question.
Greuther Fürth might disagree.
Yeah, sure. But at the end of the day,
we're talking about Der Club here.
Yeah, Der Club, as they call them in the region. I think the fact that they have such steady support behind them and in bigger numbers, and the fact that they've been so promising at home, not being afraid to attack, not being afraid to be creative, it shows. And eventually, I think they're likelier to stay up. But who knows? I mean, so many things can change. And at the end of the day, just who knows?
Yeah. Matt, what do you have something to add?
No, I'm not going to go for one of them. It's too early for that. All I will say is I think that given the struggles that Hanover are having in particular, and also the unknown factors as to how Marcus Feinziel will get on at Stuttgart.
But who is more likely to say it?
That's why I'm not saying it. I think either of them have a chance given the troubles that other clubs have.
Okay, so an equal chance.
But I'm not going to say which one.
Okay,
certainly not. But one of them will definitely go down.
Okay, all right. So, like I said, let's talk a little about the fan scene in Nuremberg, because it is somewhat interesting. It's one of the clubs that have these friendly relationship with clubs with other teams. So, Felix, do you want to describe that a little bit?
Yeah, basically, it's arguably the most famous what they call in German a Fanfreundschaft, a friendly between two sets of fans, between two clubs. And that particular one is between Erste FC Nuremberg and Schalke 04. It's been said that this friendship goes all the way to the 80s. Both teams basically support each other in games. When Schalke played in a European final, when was it? 1997, if I'm not mistaken.
97, yeah.
About 1,000 Nuremberg fans went there to support Schalke. There's lots of transfer dealings between the clubs. It got to that level. And
yeah,
you get choreography.
Cedric Teuscher,
Alessandro Schöpf was at Nuremberg as well, I think, wasn't it?
And I think it's part of a general trend, is maybe not the right word, but it's a general thing in German football that many clubs have these relations going on with other sets of fans, with other clubs, based on various things, based on their based on playing against each other at a certain point numerous times, like we've spoken before that. Maybe Mönchengladbach and Liverpool is a good example to that. Based on the same political ideas, like St. Pauli and Celtic. Based on footballing reasons of some sort. Based on proximity, HSV and Copenhagen. And this is certainly a thing. And I think Nuremberg and Schalke is just the most famous example. But it's certainly much more prevalent than that.
Matt, we got a question from the other question from the Beats 14 reads, Nuremberg and Schalke, is that not a bit weird?
Yeah, I think all fan friendships in football are weird. There's no place for love in football, is there? Is there? We should all hate each other. Felix was describing it is a phenomenon not just in German football but in European football particularly. It is often an ultra thing. Often you have friendships between various ultra groups. So you'll find, for example, an element of Borussia Dortmund's ultras are good friends with an element of Cologne's ultras, for example. The same applies to, as Felix said, Hamburg and Copenhagen. When I was at the Hamburg derby the other week, and there were a lot of Copenhagen fans there outside the ground, and I think I saw Copenhagen play away at Atletico Madrid last season, and there was a Hamburg flag hanging in the away end with the Danish supporters. So, yeah, that goes on. In the case of Nuremberg and Schalke, it's more than just the ultras or just the hooligans who are mates and who might, you know, go to games together or fight together. It's a friendship which is lived at club level. Felix, we mentioned some of the transfers between the teams, and you often find just completely normal fans, families who will also be on friendly terms with other fan clubs from either Nuremberg or Schalke. A couple of years ago, Schalke put out like a sort of Christmas video message, which it's probably available on YouTube somewhere if you Google it or YouTube it, Christian Heidel, who having just become a sport director at Schalke, basically read out the nativity Christmas story, where it was a couple of a couple of Schalke fans going around Bethlehem or whatever, looking for a place to stay because the fan's wife was pregnant. And they say, and they kept opening doors, and the owner of every inn was a Dortmund fan in the story. And they said, no, we've got no room. No, we've got no room. No, we've got no room. And definitely not for Schalke fans. Then they opened up one farmer's door, and it was a Nürnberg fan. And he said, yes, of course. Nürnberg and Schalke, come in. So this is a friendship which is lived at every level of those two clubs. Is it weird? Yeah, I think club friendships, fan friendships are generally quite weird, but you can't really dismiss them, unfortunately, because they do seem to be a big thing.
All right, we were running a little bit long, but I want to get to this question from @KCSG because I think this applies to both of these clubs and to some other clubs that are maybe in the same tier in German football. With increasing difference between the finances of the top two divisions, will even traditional teams like Düsseldorf and Nuremberg struggle to survive, and the likes of Fürth and Darmstadt have no chance to stay in the Bundesliga going forward unless they turn into somebody like RB Leipzig with absurd riches?
Yeah, we were saying before, weren't we, that's an existential question that goes to the very existence of the Bundesliga, really, doesn't it? It makes us all question, what are we doing here? We can't go into it too deeply, I suppose, because we need a whole two or three podcasts to describe all that.
We've talked about this too, especially with 50 plus 1.
We've covered it at various points, and we are whether abolishing 50 plus 1 is the answer, whether big sponsorships are the answer, as the person asking the question says, is the answer that a team has to have a massive sponsor or owner who comes in like Red Bull have done, or like Dietmar Hopp as a almost in terms of that was philanthropy rather than anything at Hoffenheim or Volkswagen at Wolfsburg. No, I don't think that's the answer. I think there are other ways around it. I think new methods, maybe new rulings are required, especially in terms of how TV and Champions League money gets filtered down the leagues. Perhaps, yeah, a new ruling, yeah, governing how that money is distributed more fairly. A more advanced form of parachute payments as well for teams going down, although you don't want to get the situation, which I think is developing in England a bit, where teams coming down from the Premier League benefit from parachute payments, which are so high, which it almost creates a double league system within the Championship. You've seen this season that I think the person asking the question is right to say that the second division is falling behind somewhat, given that ultimately I don't think anyone will have a chance of coming near Hamburg or Cologne going up. And similarly, if Nürnberg and Düsseldorf were to be the two teams who go down, I don't think they would have any issues using the experience and the financial means that they've garnered in the Bundesliga to come back up. The chasing pack in the second division, whether it's Union Berlin, whether it's St. Pauli, whether it's Dynamo Dresden, teams like that, Bielefeld. There's clearly a gap developing. Does it mean that we need big sponsors coming in? No, I don't think. I think it needs a little bit more outside the box thinking and the redistribution of wealth a bit. That sounds very Communist Manifesto, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is it's a very loaded question, and I think that a lot of the fate of these teams is going to depend a lot on what has happening with this potential EuroLeague with the top clubs around Europe. Just, I mean, whether or not these top clubs like Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, and this applies to football, not just in Germany, but overall, whether they just kind of get put in their separate league and then the football fans that want to be involved in their club and want to basically be, like you've said before in the 50 plus 1 argument, responsible for their own entertainment, that may always just be there, and they can have their own football, their own successes that might be separate from something as big from clubs as big as Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. I still think that one of the charms of German football is that it doesn't matter what, I mean, we've just talked about Nuremberg. It doesn't really matter what league they play in. They're still going to have people that go to their games. And I think that...
Yeah, but ultimately that you still want to watch your team win stuff or have as much success as is reasonably possible. And of course you want to see your team do well. That's the same for every football fan. And it, of course, it's frustrating when you come up and it seems like the ultimate ceiling or the glass ceiling for a club like Nuremberg or Düsseldorf will be simply to obtain that position in the middle of the Bundesliga, perhaps every now and again have a cup success, or every now and again sneak into the Europa League, and it can go no higher than that. So you can certainly understand the frustration and at face value you can understand the attraction of getting rid of Fishpool as well and inviting huge sponsors in who can have every club dreaming that we can win the league as well one day.
But I think it's also a matter of, as we spoken earlier, it's also a matter of identity. I think most fans in Germany, basically not to mention the one exception could be Red Bull, but most fans you will ask in Germany would say we'd rather not have the investor, not have 50+1 abolished. We'd rather have a club that isn't as successful as it could be with more money, as long as it's ours, as long as it's made out of our identity. I also think there's an argument to be made about the use of technology in German football. German football became very famous for that, mostly due to clubs like Borussia Dortmund and Hoffenheim. Clubs that tried to bridge the gaps using basically high-tech companies. As an Israeli high-tech nation and all that, I know for a fact that Borussia Dortmund and Schalke and other clubs are constantly looking to invest in startups. And that's as a means to bridge the gaps between them and other European clubs, like the rich ones in England, for instance. And that's something the other Bundesliga clubs can learn from and basically apply in their own way. I think the one thing that needs to be said is that once you're lacking in means, you need to get creative. You need to think out of the box. And a club that will do that at the end of the day will not win the league, but they'll get places, and that's, I think, more important to local fans here than any success with an investor, that's for sure.
I think it actually brings us full circle, doesn't it? Because we were talking about where the German national team are going to go at the start of the podcast, and how they got to that position they're in with the restructuring of the German academy system and a more streamlined Bundesliga academy system, which had young players, which ended up producing the generation of Müller and Kruse and Lahm and the rest of them. That came from thinking outside the box. That came from German football being innovative. You've seen the success that Red Bull and Hoffenheim have had by being innovative in the way they play, innovative in the use of technology, innovative in the use of sports science. German football's fan culture, despite it being 2018 and despite the negative things that we see in the UK, or in English football in particular, German fan culture has been innovative in order to still remain relevant. And so yeah, that definitely has a role to play, whether in rescuing Germany's national team and FA slump, or in helping so-called smaller clubs bridge the gap, but also in terms of a little bit, some innovation in terms of how we redistribute the money coming into the game, because let's face it, there is more than enough to go around, isn't there?
All right, that's enough for this week. I know that we got to a lot, but thank you so much for all the people who stuck it out until the end. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. And if you guys have questions throughout the week, don't be afraid to ask them. Matt Ford is reachable at Matt_4D, Felix Tomsett at F Tomsett, and I'm at Davis_Benopoulos. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.